This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. 20 years ago this summer, this coming August, actually, Congress passed and President Clinton signed the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act of 1996, otherwise known as welfare reform, politically known at the time and since as the end of welfare as we know it. Our Wealth and Poverty Desk is devoting the first season of our newest podcast, The Uncertain Hour, it's called, to welfare reform, specifically what 20 years of it has meant. Because the new law came with some specifics: work requirements, time limits on cash assistance, and yearly block grants to the states to fund the whole thing. Among the most basic of questions then, 20 years on, is how states are spending that money. From our Wealth and Poverty Desk, here's Marketplace's Chrissy Clark.
All right, so we're going to talk about love styles.
It's a Thursday night in Oklahoma City, and I'm in a crowded conference room.
Love styles, right?
At the front, there's a guy with a white goatee and a polo shirt.
Let me ask you something.
His name is Scott Roby, and he's pointing at a slide with the image of a big, colorful heart on it. The heart's divided up into different quadrants, labeled with different love styles.
There's do, be, give, encourage, talk, and touch. Those are the six different dimensions or love styles. And we all have all of these within us.
But Scott says in every person, one or two love styles really rise to the top. Like if you're a doer, actions are an expression of love.
Maybe cooking a meal, doing a chore of theirs that they typically do, doing a load of laundry. Oh, I said the L word, but yeah. You know, something like that.
The audience is leaning in now. People are nudging each other, giving knowing looks when their love style comes up.
Sensual touch, if it's really going to feed the love style and feed the relationship, it's not always about landing the plane, if you know what I mean. Right?
Scott's audience, mostly young or middle-aged professionals, are dressed in their business casual clothes, most headed to this room right after work. And everyone in here is either married or engaged. In fact, that's the whole reason why they're here. It's a free class called Forever for Real.
Go make your forever for real.
Open to any couple who lives in Oklahoma, a kind of marriage counseling 101 to help them improve their relationships and build strong marriages. And dance to a little Al Green. Draw pictures of what a modern marriage looks like.
We're drawing a bicycle to show all the different phases of a relationship.
At the break, over Chex Mix and pizza, I mingle with some of the couples.
I'm Trey Martin.
Trey works in biotech. His fiancée,
Lori Radford,
is a paralegal. They met online. They're getting married in April. Heard about this class at a bridal show. And as they've just discovered, they're quite compatible when it comes to love languages. Thank goodness.
Touch.
Bingo. Touch.
Well, that's nice to have the same language. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I should probably tell you what I'm doing here in this marriage class. I am actually newly married myself, and I think touch is probably one of my preferred love styles, too. Also, encouragement. But I was at this Forever for Real class in Oklahoma City for a different reason, to ask couples like Trey and Lori two questions. Okay, a question that is going to sound like it's out of left field, but there's a reason I'm asking it. How do you feel about government assistance and welfare in this country? Do we spend enough, too much, not enough? Lori did not skip a beat.
I think too much.
And you feel like too much, why?
Because I think that the people who receive it, a lot of those people don't try to go find jobs. A lot of them just sit at home and they're not looking to better themselves.
And then I ask the second question. What if I told you that this class is funded by the welfare program? Trey and Lori look at each other and this kind of amused panic spreads over Trey's face.
Oh my God, we're on welfare. I never thought I'd be on welfare. Well, that's great.
Oklahoma is just one of many states across the country where 20 years after welfare reform, tens of millions of welfare dollars are going to things that surprise even the people who are benefiting from them. And not just those people. Even policy wonks like Devon Douglas of the Oklahoma Policy Institute are surprised by how her state spends welfare money, or, as it's officially known, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF.
When I bring this up, you know, in conversation with my friends when I can't stop nerding out about my job, you know, there's kind of the quizzical look on their face and they think, oh, is the government like doing a matchmaking service? Like, does TANF help Tinder? Like, how does this work exactly? People just don't think that TANF is about getting people married.
But for others in Oklahoma, this makes perfect sense.
At the most basic level, a two-income family was more likely to take people out of poverty than a one-income family.
Mary Myrick is the president of Public Strategies, the for-profit public relations firm that runs Oklahoma's marriage initiative. Since 2001, her company has received more than $70 million in welfare money to run these marriage classes. The whole idea took hold in Oklahoma in the late 90s, when a report was commissioned by the state to look at why Oklahoma had one of the lowest per capita incomes in the country. The report pointed to the state's high divorce and out-of-wedlock pregnancy rates as possible causes. Right around the same time, welfare reform was kicking in, and the new system of block grants that gave states a lot of flexibility in terms of how they could use federal welfare dollars. Here's Kendi Cox, who also works at Public Strategies.
And so our governor at the time met with our Department of Human Services and said, why don't we use a very small portion of that money to try some innovative things to strengthen families as a way to say, you know, we spend in government so much time, so many resources dealing with the fallout of the family. Perhaps we should do some things on the prevention side.
And the Oklahoma Marriage Initiative was born. Some classes target low-income people, but most are open to everyone, rich, poor, and in between.
We're also providing an opportunity for anybody in the state of Oklahoma to access services that really can bolster the, not only their relationship, but their ability to stay self-sufficient and avoid poverty if they are, you know, middle-income people.
But the fact that all of these programs are funded by welfare dollars has become a growing concern to state lawmakers in Oklahoma, Democrats and Republicans, because while the money's going to lots of families who don't consider themselves especially needy, the state is also full of families who are, by any measure, very needy, but aren't getting any cash welfare at all. In Oklahoma, just 7 out of every 100 families living in poverty receive cash assistance.
We've got Chrissy Clark in the studio with us for some more on that story. Hey, Chrissy.
Hey, Kai.
So about that last paragraph, just 7 out of every 100 poor families in the state of Oklahoma get cash assistance. How did that happen? How did they get there?
Yeah. So part of the reason so many fewer poor families get cash welfare in Oklahoma compared to before welfare reform is because the state has really shifted a lot of its spending away from cash welfare. Today, Oklahoma spends just about 9% of its so-called temporary assistance for needy family dollars on cash assistance. Meanwhile, almost as much, 5%, goes to promoting marriage and preventing out-of-wedlock pregnancy. And that's completely legal because the way the welfare reform law was written in 1996, it was pretty vague. There's this preamble at the beginning that lists these 4 purposes of the law. And at the time, they didn't get a whole lot of attention. But it turns out that these 4 purposes, these bullet points, are actually what ends up controlling how states can spend their welfare money. And the first 2 boil down to what you might think of as welfare, cash assistance, help getting welfare recipients to work, things like job training and child care and transportation. I actually have all 4 of them printed out for you here.
Okay, here we
so
go.
Take a look at numbers 3 and 4.
All right, numbers 3 and 4. Prevent and reduce the incidence of out-of-wedlock pregnancies. Fine. Encourage the formation and maintenance of 2-parent families is number 4. And I guess you could see that, right? I mean, and that's what some of the women in that piece were talking about. 2-income family helps that whole family stay out of poverty.
Right. But of course, this is not what we heard a whole lot of coming out of welfare reform and the headlines. And even many of the folks who supported this focus on marriage 20 years ago say that the programs that have come out of the push haven't done a whole lot to reduce poverty yet. It's just too complicated a set of dynamics and trying to encourage people to get married. But beyond that, states have used the broadness of these four purposes to justify all kinds of spending that you might not associate with welfare or work. Nationally, just about a quarter of all temporary assistance for needy families dollars goes to cash assistance. A quarter goes to work supports, things like job training and childcare, and the other half goes to other things. Things like foster care, pre-K programs, marriage promotion programs. And regardless of how worthy these programs might be, meanwhile, many of the very poor are not getting any just basic assistance. Nationally, just 23 out of every 100 poor families with children gets cash assistance today.
You have, as part of this project, created a tool that we're going to have on our website, right, where people can go and look and see what their states spend on welfare and how many poor families with children get that cash assistance.
Yeah, right? It's pretty amazing to dive into what your state does.
We have it obviously on our website, the new podcast from a Wealth and Poverty Desk. It's season one, episode what, three is the new one, right?
Three, yeah.
Three. It's called The Uncertain Hour, available obviously wherever you get your podcast. Check it out. It's quite a piece of work, as always, from Chrissy Clark and the Wealth and Poverty Desk. Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks so much, Kai.